It's time to think big with Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and No Good Lying Through Your Tooth Tall Alaska Tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Coming to you from the studios of AM 750 KFQD and 103.7 FM and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve and some Big Alaska Show friends. Today we honor an Alaskan legend, Hobo Jim. And joining us sharing stories are Terry Bird, Steve Rachednik, and Eddie Parker. Plus, close calls from our deadliest catch mythbuster, Mike Ferris. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
And good morning. Welcome to the Big Alaska Show. And Mike Ford, you're back.
I'm back.
Yay.
Which is better than being a front. I don't want to ever affront anybody.
Are they malpropisms? What if it was Norm Crosby?
Yes. I loved Norm Crosby. He always made up words that weren't real words, but you knew exactly what he meant.
So last week, I posted at our BigAlaska.com website, our podcast, and I did the intro on it. And it missed your magic vocal cords.
Oh, thank you.
Mine doesn't work like yours. So
for $29.95 and a secret operation, we can get that all taken care of for you.
It didn't cost much to do business with us, man.
That's right.
You were doing dog sled races. You were doing, yeah. We did a lot of stuff for the Fur Rendezvous.
We did. And it was kind of sad because we had to cancel the third day, but it's all about dog safety. The ice on the trail was just like razor blades. So they called off the third day, but it was kind of cool because we got to go down there. And so I'm there with Cale Casey, our firefighter friend who's out on the trail and doing all his fun stuff.
Cale Casey goes out and streams the race.
Yeah. And I had Eddie Streeper was going to join me. And so they both show up. We're up there at the above the 4th Avenue. And they go, what are we going to do? I go, okay, here's what we do. I'm going to send you down there. Go to that sound guy by the PA. We've still got the mic out the window. It'll pick up the PA. And then I want you to grab half the mushers and you to grab the other half and get the wireless mics and watch for me up in the window because they won't be able to actually hear me. They don't have their ears on, right? But they can see me point. And I would say, okay, now let's go to Eddie Streeper. And I pointed him, and who's Eddie got? Okay, and he's talking to a musher. And it was back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Mel Kakowski, of course, the honorable PA announcer of many years of all events downtown, right? And I could see him looking over, and I don't think they asked to use those microphones. I think they just got them from the sound guy.
Hey, man.
And you can see him looking over like, okay, I hear this. What's going on? You know, and he rolled with it. It was really cool. And they moved the bleachers from the other side of the street across the way. And it was very impromptu, but it was really kind of cool. And so you got to hear about the first 2 days of the race from almost every one of the mushers that was taking part. And it was really cool. It's something you don't usually get a chance to do because everybody's busy trying to win the race. And then we also got to broadcast the entire award ceremony. And it turned out to be almost the exact timing what it would have been for day 3 for our race coverage. So wow. It all worked out. You know, we're up there 10 minutes before airtime. They're like, what are we doing? I said, oh, here's what we do. It was really cool.
That sounds like me.
You know? Yeah, that sounds like our show. And then I got to thinking, I got all my training right here with the Big Alaska Show. True.
See? All that stress,
right?
I put you through, buddy. It pays off.
Thank you, Uncle Steve.
And just so people know, what we're talking about are the Fur Rendezvous World Championship sprint races.
Right.
These are different from the Iditarod races that they dovetail into the Iditarod. But Mike was the voice, the broadcast voice for broadcasting these dog races that are supposed to be 3 days. But what happens, the third day was because of the conditions. they wanted to make sure they took care of the feet of the dogs.
All about safety. And if it had been a week later, the Iditarod gets this like 10 inches of snow on the ceremonial start. So it would have been a perfect day for mushing the third day of the sprint. So that was kind of ironic. And I really love the way that they've dovetailed Rondi into the beginning of Iditarod now. So people can come up and enjoy the Fur Rendezvous a little bit and then still get to see the ceremonial start of the Iditarod. So that's.
And so people know the Fur Rendezvous is a cabin fever reliever that Anchorage does. A lot of events and all sort of things to get people out and enjoy Alaska. And they've got the dog sled races. Now, normally in the past, they would have the Mr. Furface, the beard contest.
Yes.
The beard mustache contest, but they didn't for various reasons, but you still got to MC it.
Well, here's the thing. It was like the Jim Beam Jam, which usually was on Friday. They weren't the sponsor anymore, so they morphed it into a country deal instead of the masquerade ball. So the Lions decided, well, we're going to go do our own thing. And so we went down to Willowa and they had me MC the Mr. Furface competition. It was a standalone event and it was full house. It was a great time. And Susan and the gang at Willowa always have a great venue for that. And so, you know, I'm interviewing all these people and, you know, back in the day I had a nice beard and I've been contemplating, you know, doing that again, but my wife's really not into beards. And so, but one of the judges was saying, yeah, the next competition is going to be the world competition will be in New Zealand. And I thought, well, that's a, you know, I might be able to, you know, swing growing a beard and convince my wife that we need to go to New Zealand for a vacation. And then, some guy comes running up, wait, that got changed. They decided to pull out on the venue and the judge goes, so where is it? Pittsburgh. I said, well, I'm not getting a beard now.
There's some impressive hair suits, baby.
Oh, it's amazing. This year it was the brown beard won the fur face, the Mr. Fur Face. But the pyrite beards, the fake ones, were the most impressive because you had some pretty, pretty nice looking ladies pop up there with these pyrite beards. And
well, it's great to have you back, Mikey. And I want to talk a little bit about today's show. We're right in the middle of the Iditarod, the 1049 dog sled race from Anchorage to Nome. For those outside of Alaska who are not familiar with the Iditarod, this is a race that commemorates the 1925 serum run that saved Nome from an outbreak of diphtheria. And so early March, every year, we have this race, and it's extremely popular in Alaska, and it takes about 2 weeks-ish. So we're right in the middle of it. And there are many characters that come out of the Iditarod. This is truly Alaskan. And one of the characters was a beloved musician by the name of Hobo Jim that sadly we lost back in October, much too young. And Hobo is lovingly referred to as Alaska's balladeer. One of the songs he wrote became the Iditarod's anthem. And this is what it sounds like.
Well, way up in Alaska, the state that stands alone, there's a dog race run from Anchorage to Nome. And it's a grueling race with a lightning pace, where the chilly winds do wail. Beneath the northern lights, cross snow and the ice, and it's called the Iditarod Trail. Well, give me a team and a good lead dog and a sled that's built so fine, and let me race those miles to Nome 1049. Then when I get back to my home, hey, I can tell my tale. I did the Iditarod Trail. Well, the race, it won't be easy for the masters of the trail, and some of them will make it and some of them will fail. But just to run that race takes a tough and a hardy breed, and a lot of work done by the dogs that run across snow with a whistling speed. Well, give me a team and a good lead dog and a sled that's built so fine, and let me race those miles to Nome 1049. Then when I get back to my home, hey, I can tell my tale. I did the Iditarod Trail.
And so that's just a clip of the Iditarod Trail song. And it's played all the time, and everybody loves it, and everybody loved Hobo Jim. You know, this time of year, we think about Hobo Jim, and we wanted to remember him through a bunch of people that's in the broadcast industry that's covered the Iditarod, And a few of those people we got in touch with who share their stories about the Iditarod and Hobo Jim. And so we've got Terry Burge, Eddie Parker, Eddie P as we call him, and Steve Rechednik talking about their experiences with Hobo Jim. Then the other interview we have is with our good buddy, our Deadliest Catch Mythbuster, Mike Ferris, who's a second-generation Kodiak fisherman. We call him the Deadliest Catch Mythbuster because he grew up around these people, he knows all these people, and he knows commercial fishing, and he hates how Hollywood Hollywoodizes commercial fishing. Even at 59 years old, Mike still goes out and commercial fishes in the summer. And then he comes back and shares his tales with us. But one of the things we do with Mike, we like to bring him back periodically to talk about what we call close calls, having to do with his experiences with commercial fishing, so you get a real sense of what it's really like to commercial fish in Alaska. Anyway, that's our show. Of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way with some of the most caustic brew on the planet. Folks, the key to doing an early morning radio show, especially a Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than Big Alaska Show Blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why it's the preferred coffee for Iditarod mushers. It takes a lot of work to run the Iditarod, and mushers go for days with very little sleep. But just one sip of caffeine-packed Big Alaska Show Blend, and mushers won't get any sleep, and only need one dog. And one taste says it all. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt. Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas. That's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around, we have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
Double pane windows are warm. Triple pane windows are warmer and quieter. Get all side triple pane windows for the price of double pane windows with installation at Neighbors Windows and Doors. Certified Alaska Tough by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, all side windows come with a lifetime warranty against everything Alaska can throw at them. Plus, take an additional $100 off installation per window or door at Neighbors Windows and Doors. Visit NeighborsWindowsAndDoors.com and thank you for buying local.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy and co-host, Mike Ford. In this segment, it's our buddy, Mike Ferris, our Deadliest Catch Mythbuster, who shares one of his close calls. Now, Mike is a second-generation Kodiak fisherman, grew up commercial fishing in Kodiak. And the reason we call him our Deadliest Catch Mythbuster is because the Deadliest Catch, first of all, Mike knows who these guys are, plus he's grew up in the industry. And his folks sold one of the boats to Deadliest Catch at one time. But what really annoys Mike the most is how Hollywood Hollywoodizes commercial fishing. So Mike likes to share stories that tell what it's really like to be a commercial fisherman in Alaska. So here we are with our Deadliest Catch Mythbuster, Mike Ferris, with another one of his close calls. And here we are with another episode of Close Calls with our Deadliest Catch Mythbuster, Mike Ferris. So I'm looking at in front of me, I'm seeing pictures of old pictures because it's your daughter and your son on your boat, and then maps. So explain to me what I'm looking at.
When we had the original boat, it was built in 1994, and we had it in Kodiak for a month or so. We just were playing around, we'd go gill netting with it out in front of Buskin River. Kids went on it, went over to Long Island, anchored in the harbor, took a little skiff in, spent a weekend out there. So we just had a lot of fun with it. Actually, the kids, years later, we go, hey, we're going camping. They go, is a boat here? Because that's how they knew camping was, going out on a boat. And they go, no, we're doing a little more of a tent. So we had this boat and running it over to Igigik the first time we took it out there, and we ran out of diesel out in the middle of nowhere. What had really happened, we had it in Kodiak. We'd been running it around for several weeks or a month, and we got it all loaded up. And one thing about jet boats, they're not like a prop boat. A prop boat kind of has the same speed no matter what. A jet boat, the more weight you put on it, the less efficient it gets. So we've been running around empty. Hey, this is really cool. We loaded it down, take to the bay. Well, we're not doing quite as much. We're plowing through the water a little more. But we took off and had a 55-gallon drum of diesel. And took off, and we ran down the east side of Kodiak Island. Pretty nice. Left in the afternoon. Most of the night, we're running down there. We're making, you know, 22, 25 knots. We're making good speed. It was getting in the morning. Got my brother up to run the boat. And I told my wife, okay, we're here to here. We ought to be in King Cove around this time. Expect a call from us. So we took off. And, you know, that boat's burning. I'll just pick a number. 30 gallons an hour. It's burning a lot. Maybe 20 gallons an hour when you're on full throttle. But you're making great speed, 25 knots. So we were screaming down the east side of the island. I gave the boat to my brother. I went to lay down. Well, the weather came up a little bit. So now it's not flat calm. We're plowing through the waves. So we're still burning 25 or 30 gallons an hour, but we're not making 25 knots anymore. We're making like 9 or 12 knots. And he didn't throttle back. He could have throttled back to almost burning nothing and still made 8 or 9 knots, but he's got balls to the wall. Going full speed, and I'm sleeping, and all of a sudden I hear boom, 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 boom. Engine shuts off. I'm like, instantly I knew. I was dead asleep. Instantly I knew what happened. We're out of fuel. So I wake up, go look. We're in the Samedi Islands. That's one of the pictures. It's straight miles. It's like 200 miles south of Kodiak. And I'm trying to do the math in my head. I go, hold on, holy moly, we're totally out of diesel. We have 55 gallons on us. The closest point we can get to is Chignik, which is about 70 miles away. And I'm doing the math in my head. We can't make it. I can get us close, but we can't make it. But we're in the Samedis, and the wind's blowing, and we're drifting towards Japan. There's nothing between us and Japan, and that's the way we're drifting. We have a VHF radio that has maybe 10, 15 miles of reception that you can get to people. There's nobody around us. Nothing we can do. We're on our own. So we open up the 55 gallon, hand pump the 55 gallons into our 400 gallon tank. We've already gone through 400 gallons of diesel. Oh, wow. Because we were running so efficient in the bad weather. My brother didn't back off the throttle. But now it's way in the bow compartment. The fuel's in the bow. The engines are in the back. And a diesel engine, you got to pull all that fuel. So you have a little 2-inch little pump on it. And you start pumping. And you got to brake. And you got to pump and pump and pump and pump and pump. And bring it up through the ray course. Then through the ray course. Then up to the fuel filter. And then you have to break every little crack along the way to get all the air out of the system.
Oh, wow.
And then you have all the injectors. We got 6 injectors and all the little pieces and parts. And so we pumped for like 2 hours just sucking fuel in all the way through, getting that up. You know, so we can finally start the engine. We finally, you know, got the engine going, and I'm like, okay, I guess that's why they call me Mike Guyver, because I can just get stuff working. But by now, we should have been in King Cove, and we're not. And I'm like, okay, we got power. Chignik's the closest place we're going to get, and we're not going to get there, but it's close enough. Maybe we can get somebody on radio. So we took off towards Chignik, 5-6 miles from Chignik, ran out of fuel. Now we're drift again. But I saw a boat way south of us on the horizon and picked up the radio, channel 16, which is an emergency channel on VHF, and said, hey, this is Norrin Rad. We're out of fuel. Could you guys come back and help us? So they came back, said, what's going on? I go, we are totally out of fuel. So they filled my fuel tank up, filled my diesel tank up, all that. Meanwhile, my wife's in Kodiak going, I should have had a phone call by now. Mm-hmm. I should have had a phone call by now. And gives it about 6 hours, calls my dad, you know, who's a fisherman, and says, well, the boys haven't checked in. He goes, ah, that'd be okay. They're not okay, because she woke up out of a dead sleep in the middle of the night and goes, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, she knew that. So it's really weird. And so she gets hold of the Coast Guard says, I got a boat missing. She gets hold of a lady named Peggy Dyson, who used to give the marine weather, and said, can you put the word out? I don't know where these guys are. Maybe we're 12 hours late by now, but it was a long time. Yeah. So we finally get the boat up and running after just hours. So you imagine breaking all those little fittings. We're covered in diesel. The engine room is filled with diesel. Everything covered in diesel, smells like diesel, but we have an engine that's working. And since we ran out and we had to fill the tank again, we had to break every fitting and prime it all again and suck all the air out of the whole system. So we finally get going. These guys gave us fuel. I said, what do I owe you? They go, nothing. They gave us 450 gallons of fuel, probably worth, $1,500. I said, don't worry about it. Try and give us a little fish this summer. So we get on step. Now the weather's good. We go screaming, get to King Cove. Finally call my wife. She goes, oh my God, I'm so worried about it. I go, yeah, we had a little problem. At least we didn't end up in Japan. We were able to get it fixed and get back. And then we go from King Cove, False Pass, a third of the tank, fill up. Port Moeller, fill up. Port Hyden, every stop we can do, we filled that tank back up because we were not going to run out of fuel again. And so finally got there, and everybody goes, hey, you guys bring your boat around? Do you have any adventure? I go, yeah, we had a bit of adventure.
Just so people know, who was on the boat?
So it was myself, my brother, who were part owners, and two crew members. I don't remember who they were. They were a couple kids from Kodiak at the time. Yeah. And those kids were just sitting around. They go, they didn't know.
Did you have plenty of water?
Yeah, we had water and food. I mean, don't think we would have lived. I don't think we would have lived all the way to Japan. Yeah, no. But we had a gill net. I guess we could have put that out, caught some food along the way.
Oh my gosh, it just kills me every time we're around you. We hear all these stories, and usually it involves Shannon worrying about you. And I keep thinking, he's got to, especially after this last season, man. I mean, that was the most. Anybody who listens to our Big Alaska Show podcast of your last one, Curtis puking 14 times in the first day and rough the whole time. Yeah. And I thought, this should be the last one. This should be, it's time to, go be your Rotary District Governor and chill, man. But no, you're going to get another stinking boat. Yeah, what does Shannon say about that?
No, she was for it. We were actually trying to get the boat built. One builder thought we had a deal actually said, I can't do it. They're too much. I went to another builder, and they said, if we can get the pieces and parts, we'd love to build you a boat. And they called me last week and said, we can't get them. You just can't get the pieces and parts. We couldn't do it till can't do it in 2022. It'd be 2023. And actually, I'm going to meet with those guys again on Monday. The funny thing was when we finally got the Igigik, and we're delivering fish, and we're brand new for this cannery. And all of a sudden, the tender that had given us fuel was in Igigik. So one day, we pulled over and gave them all of our salmon. And I hear a couple of other guys from our cannery on the radio, hey, what cannery you fish for? And I'm like,
yeah.
I go, "You, if you only knew what these guys did for us, I'd give them my fish all summer if I had to." Yeah, it was funny. But we took a little grief, actually, from the fleet, because they're like, hey, how come you're giving fish to these other people? I go, well, because basically they saved our lives.
Yeah. Or they think you're doing some kind of payola, some kind of favoritism by giving them fish?
No. Normally if you fish for a cannery, there's benefits. They let you store your boat. They do other things for you. So those are benefits. And for that, they expect to get your fish. So, I gave some other fish and I go, well, aren't you loyal to the company? I go, actually, I'm not loyal to any company. I don't care. I can go to another company tomorrow. It really doesn't bother me.
Okay.
But
now, why do these guys give you grief? I guess I'm trying to understand.
Because we're brand new. We're brand new to the cannery. We're new kids on the block. We're new kids on the block with a new boat on the block.
Okay.
And, these other guys have been out there for 20 years. And, who are these guys? What do they show up?
Oh, I see. So you're getting some benefits that they feel.
And they can go give fish to other cannery. We can't do that. And I'm like, I don't even care.
Yeah, what's really cool about it, though, is growing up in Alaska, I always liked the old where people help each other. When you said 400 gallons, I knew that was a lot. I didn't realize it was going to be about $1,500. But that's the neat thing about a small Alaska community. People helped each other.
Yeah, if you're on the water, everybody knows you're on the water, that you don't have a lot of resources. Somebody's in trouble, you help them. I remember years and years ago, it was an older boat, had some native guys on it out of Igigik, and they had broke down. And I went by, you guys need help? And yes, so we actually towed them in to their tender where they can get tied up. And they said, thank you very much. You guys are going to have a good day of fishing tomorrow. And I said, yeah, whatever. Next day, we had a great day of fishing.
I can see when you saw those guys again, hey, you guys need a tow?
Yeah. Okay. No. So, no, you help people on the water. I mean, there are boats that have burnt, and other guys are just, how fast can we get there and get these people off? And you drop everything you can and help somebody on a boat, because you don't get a walk off a boat. You don't get you're stuck on a boat, and all there is water around you. So fishermen are always really, really good if you need help.
Close calls of the edge of the world and our deadliest catch myth buster, Mike Ferris. This is one of the more gentle ones we have. Usually we have to use our beep button a lot. Hang in there, Shannon.
And that's Mike Ferris, our deadliest catch myth buster.
Like you mentioned, you don't have to use the button too much on that one.
it was a much tamer interview than we normally have with him.
But I'll tell you, it brought back some memories for me too, because, you know, when I was a kid, my brother and I and my two cousins, we each had like a little 10-foot skiff. I think we had a 5-horse Eska engine, which was really not a knockoff. I don't know, we're made in Czechoslovakia or something. And then my cousins had a 3-horse Johnson. We'd go around the little bay out by our house, right? But well, one time my brother forgot to put gas. I'll blame my brother. Forgot to put gas in it. You know, we had to row like 8 miles to get home. Nothing like Mike had to go through, but it still brought back some painful memories. I couldn't walk for a day or two after that.
Just so people know, Mike Ford, his dad was a tugboat captain.
Yes.
So you grew up around that. And
grew up around the water.
You can commiserate.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And how he blamed his brother. That's the part I really honed in on.
Hand your brother an anchor there. Yeah.
Yes.
You're listening to The Big Alaska Show at bigalaskashow.com. You get your podcast as well at bigalaskashow.com. And you can email us at bigalaskashow.com. And we'll be right back right after this.
This is Mike Ferris, president of Alaska Enterprise Solutions. As businesses return to work, the old office footprint might be a little different. These days, not all employees need to be in an office. And what used to meet your printing needs probably has changed. With less employees and less printing, are you paying too much? Let us help right-size your printing environment and reduce your printing costs. This is Mike Ferris, Alaska Enterprise Solutions. Visit us at aesalaska.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
And thanks for joining us on The Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. Recently, Alaska lost an Alaskan icon, Hobo Jim, known as the Balladeer of Alaska. And Hobo had a major impact on Alaska, especially associated with the Iditarod. His song, The Iditarod Trail, is the anthem for the Iditarod. And so we reached out to some friends of ours who've had encounters and stories with Hobo Jim, and we asked them to share them with us so that we could share those with Jim's wife, Cindy, family, and friends. This first gentleman is Terry Burge, a man that I've known for a long time in the broadcast industry, and Terry's had a long, long career in broadcast in the Iditarod. And so we asked Terry to call in and share some stories and thoughts about Hobo Jim. Would you please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome on the phone right now with Terry Burge.
Hey, good morning. You were talking about everybody your age, and I'm calling right now from the home. I'm trying to keep the noise from the Canasta tournament at bay.
Down?
But anyway.
You know you're getting a little older, Terry, when like oatmeal is spicy.
Yeah.
Hey, man, thanks so much for joining us here on the Big Alaska Show. Really good to hear your voice. Sorry we've missed each other. I know you've been back east taking care of a lot of family stuff, and I'm glad you're back here in Alaska. You have a long history of broadcast. We've known each other for several years. You've done a lot of coverage on the Iditarod.
Yeah, and most of my experience with Hobo goes back to like about 1982. To do a little pre-groundwork here, in 1980, I was working at Chemo TV, Channel 13, and I got a call one morning, hey, we need you to go to Nome to cover the Iditarod. And I'm going, the Iditarod what? You know, and So I go to Nome, and we had no idea what we were doing, Ken Garland and I. So I'm we got a forklift, and I'm up on top of this forklift, you know, trying to shoot the first musher coming in. And Joe May was the winner that year. But one thing that is firmly implanted in my brain was I was probably about 6 or 8 feet from one of the Nome speakers for their PA. And back in those early days, they played Johnny Horton's North to Alaska. And I don't know how many of you know it, but I just happen to have it queued up here, so I'll just play a quick clip of it if
sure.
That's okay.
Why not?
Well, anyway, they had that thing on a loop.
So little earworm.
Yeah, and you know, you're sitting there, and you know it's cold outside, and you're you know, sometimes waiting an hour for a team to come in, and you know, we didn't have GPS tracking and all that back then. You just kind of, well, I saw him way out at the drill dredge, you know, and things like that. So, but it just went on and on and on and on. I'm going, oh, man. So anyway, that's one of the biggest remembrances that I have of that 1980 and 81.
I was talking to Jacob, who is a third of my age, and I was telling him the kind of equipment that we had to carry back then is probably responsible for my hernia.
Yeah. It was a 3/4 inch deck with a umbilical probably 6 foot long, which when, you know, in the cold, it got really stiff.
Yeah.
So it made maneuvering really hard. You had this battery belt around your waist that was, you know, would give you maybe 30 minutes of operating time, but the thing was probably 30 pounds. And so you couldn't bend over if you had two of those belts on. And it was a Hitachi FP3030, I believe was the numbers of it. A little single tube camera, and the quality was really bad. Yeah, and I had the little small tripod up on top of this forklift, and we absconded the sheets from the Nome Nugget Hotel, and put a blue circle on it with ABC in it, and put Chemo TV, and we stapled that to the side of the forklift. So real high quality graphics back then.
You've covered the Iditarod for several years, and you did it actually during this pandemic, didn't you? Or you were involved here not that long ago.
Yeah. This coming year, I believe, is number 30, and I've probably got about 20 or so in a row. I did 80 to 82, and then had a few years doing other responsibilities at 13, and then came back on at around 89 or 90, and, you know, did them, you know, almost back-to-back for a number of years. Basically, that my involvement this last year, well, 2 years ago for the 2019 finish, we were in Nome, and, of course, they were telling, don't go to Nome. Nobody was, you know, so there were very few people in the chute. We're sitting there, and we're hearing they're getting ready to close down all the flights in and out of everywhere. You know,
yes.
Oh, man, we don't want to get trapped in Nome. Nome's a nice place, but I'd rather be home instead of sitting here for 6 months, you know.
Yes, yes.
And the restaurants, they closed down, so you had to call, order, go pick it up, and bring it back to City Hall is where we were headquartered out of. So, yeah, and then last year, of course, they only went to the halfway, and it turned around and came back to Deshka Landing.
It's interesting because when the pandemic hit, it was the Iditarod was the only professional sport happening. Because when we went to the Mushers Banquet, they would not have had the Iditarod a week later.
Right, right.
I may have been the last guy to shake Governor Dunleavy's hand because we didn't know. We just everything was just really eerie at that time. At the Mushers Banquet, and I saw Hobo Jim, and Jim was the kind of guy that your best friends, as soon as you saw him, hey, how's it going? Hey,
yeah.
And he was about to go on stage to play his Iditarod Trail song. I said, hey, why don't you come do the Big Alaska show? He get in touch with me, and we'll do it. And that's the last time I saw him. But I was going to say, you talked about you first met him in 1982. When you met him, did you meet him up in Nome?
Well, yeah, it was kind of funny. You know, the first 2 years I was doing it for 13, and the third year in 1992, Chemo got a call from 2020. Geraldo Rivera wanted to do a 2020 segment on the Iditarod. And it was, I think it ended up being about half the program.
Sure.
So we went out with the producer named Dick Clark, not the same, a real nice guy. And it was a pretty stormy year that year. We were doing all sorts of flying with Stinky Hardy, our pilot, you know. And he would go, Stinky. Yahoo, when he'd take off. But but not to focus on our part so far as Iditarod. In Nome, Fat Freddy's was the restaurant that everybody used to go to. I think it sold about 4 or 5 years ago, or maybe a little longer now. Anyway, in front of that was a bar, and I can't even remember the name of the bar. So we stuck our head in, and we see this guy up on stage, cowboy hat and all, you know, singing songs. So, well, let me get a little bit of this and capture what's going on in the bar. And then he goes into the Iditarod Trail. And, man, the bar went crazy with it. And I'm not positive if he even had it out officially, because it was on his 82 Thunderfoot album, I believe. So
yes.
It may not have even been released yet. I don't know. But he did the song. I recorded the whole thing, and Dick Clark went up to him after he finished his set and gave him $300, because a competition out there was CBS Sports, and he said, "Don't sing it when CBS Sports is around." So he took the $300 and da 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 da, and about a day later, he came up to us, and he was feeling really bad. He said, "I was in the middle of my Iditarod song, and CBS walks in and starts videoing." And he's going, "Are you mad at me?" And we went, no, you know. So anyway, that was sort of my first, you know, recollection of Jim. And then about 3 years ago, you know, we would bump into him. He'd be at the bar almost every finish of the Iditarod, and he'd always do his song 3 or 4 times in the set, you know.
Sure.
And everybody'd go crazy.
Yes.
And I saw him at the airport. He was going to be on the same flight that we were on leaving. There wasn't a whole big crowd or anything around. I just went up to him, and I said, "I don't know if you remember." And he went, "Oh, yeah, I remember that." It sort of launched me in my career almost. He remembered the $300 and, you know, da-da-da-da. And he reached into his satchel, and he pulls out, he says, here's my latest CD. It was always a you know, a special place in my heart.
Isn't it fun to be in Alaska where everything's just organic, man? I mean, it's we're still living a history of where we go back, and you're on a forklift with a 3/4-inch camera. Everybody needs to take an opportunity to go out in the cold with video equipment, with the battery pack around your belts and all the wires and the clothing. It's like a giant, long isometric.
Not to take anything away from Jim, but my first experience out there, our pilot was actually the brother of former owner of Channel 13, the late Dwayne Triplett. Ken Triplett, his brother, had the flying service. And we land in Unalakleet, and I get out, you know, I'm what, my 20s. He looks at me and he says, "Where's your hat?" Of course, I didn't want to mess up my hair, you know.
Sure.
And he points his finger at me. He says, "Don't you ever come out here to the bush without a hat." And so he gave me a hat. There's a couple of pictures on my Facebook page that the late Jim Brown took, black and white, of me up on that forklift. And I'm sitting there in just regular shoes and a light flight jacket, and I look like I'm frozen, which I was. I had no clue as to, you know, what going out into the bush was.
Terry, I really appreciate you taking the time, and it's good to talk to you again. You know, we don't get a chance
.
And, hey, let's give a warm Big Alaska Show thank you and much success to our good buddy, Mr. Terry Burge. Thanks a lot, Terry.
And that's Terry Burge, a longtime production guy that we've known.
The funniest part about all of that is his first Iditarod and my first Iditarod. I was there. That was the one I've always told you about, where I'm out by Cape Nome and I can't see anything yet. So he was on Front Street up in that makeshift forklift, right? Doing his thing. And we both had crappy clothes on and we were freezing our tails off. So I didn't know he was a half a mile from where I, or a mile or two from where I was. That's pretty amazing. So So we both shared the first Iditarod memory together.
And just so people know, we've talked about this in other shows we've done, but Mike Ford started his broadcast career in Alaska at KNOM, and he had to report from White Mountain. And this was a live feed coming in where he had to report the action coming towards near the finish line. And they go to him for a live feed. And
I see nothing. But you bring up White Mountain, and that's another interesting thing I caught from what Terry was saying, where they had the loop that would go back on the Johnny Horton song. And that's all he heard for, for all those hours. But there's a mistake in that song, Uncle Steve. Because White Mountain is not a little southeast of Nome. I can't remember which direction it is, but somebody pointed that out to me once in Nome when I played that song on KNOM.
And, so it has to be southwest.
I'm imagining.
Right here, folks, no other broadcast station in history has spot. And there you have the secret. Terry Burge has held in his head for all these years.
He didn't even know it.
No, that's awesome. Hey, you're listening to Big Alaska Show. Go to bigalaskashow.com. You can write us. You can get our podcast as well at bigalaskashow.com. We'll be right back.
Bogged or broken glass in your windows or doors? Get it replaced fast and save from Neighbors Windows and Doors. Neighbors Windows and Doors manufactures replacement glass right here in Anchorage. That means factory direct savings to you, a quick turnaround, and a lifetime warranty. From now until the end of March, save 20% on all locally manufactured insulated glass. Plus, take 20% off the installation service by an expert technician. Visit neighborswindowsanddoors.com and thank you for buying local.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And thank you for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. We've been reminiscing with some friends of ours about Hobo Jim, an Alaskan icon, a beloved man, musician, writer, that we lost recently. So we've been sharing stories about Hobo Jim. And this next buddy of mine is Eddie Parker, or Eddie P as we call him. I met Eddie back in the 80s, as you'll hear, and quite an Alaskan broadcast character himself. So we continue with Eddie Parker and stories about Hobo Jim.
One of the gentlemen is a longtime friend of mine, Eddie Parker. We call him Eddie P up here. I met Eddie P when he was a video jock, a VJ, at when we did a thing called Catch 22. And
Oh, my Lanta.
That's my man. And back then, when you had hair, brother. So anyway, Eddie is a good friend of Hobo Jim's, and Eddie, let's give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Eddie Parker. Eddie P.
Hey, how you doing, Stevie?
Hey, man, thanks for joining us on the Big Alaska Show, and I've been wanting to do a show with you anyway to talk about your broadcast career in Alaska. It's a great story. You do a television program every week on Channel 2 called The Venue. And basically, it's sort of an extension of Catch 22, in which what that was Alaska's version of MTV.
Absolutely.
And so The Venue is sort of a similar version of that, right?
Yes, exactly what it is. Not any storylines going on, just music television.
And what time does that air on Saturday nights?
It airs, I always say, right after SNL, because it's like around 12:02 or something like that, but right after SNL on KTUU Channel 2.
Okay.
So I'm for an hour now.
You're an hour?
Yep, we went through an hour a couple weeks ago.
Oh, man.
I know.
My back, it just gives me a headache. You and Hobo Jim were friends.
We were friends, and he had his schedule going on, and that's when I had mine, but I met him for the first time during the Iditarod in the 80s. He was amazing then, and I'm from Texas, so I've always loved the country cowboy way, and he was the epitome of one in Alaska. Eventually, I did get a chance to meet him and hang out a few times, and he was always an amazing person, and he always, without fail, told me how bright and white my teeth were.
You have the brightest,
you do. I mean, your teeth are so white that I'm surprised it doesn't burn the tubes on a camera.
And I did explain to him at once why my teeth look so white to him all the time. It's because I'm really dark skinned.
Yeah.
And so when you put something like that against it, then that's why they're so white. But he's always complimented me on my smile and stuff. So, and of course that endeared me to him.
Yeah.
My biggest experience with Jim came from when I was one of the managers at the Aviator Hotel, and we used to book him. Surprisingly or not, during this time every year, in October, he would come to Alaska and come to Anchorage, and he would perform at the Aviator Hotel in the Cafe Lounge. The things that used to go on there, all of them were fantastic, but I would fangirl out every time he came into the building and just make him feel like the star that he was, and everybody would gather around. What people didn't know is that Jim not only did his show, but he always gave you extra. You'd hire him for 2 or 3 hours, and then he would always give you extra. He would come in early, get things set up, never in a bad mood. You know how sometimes you're setting up and you're trying to get things done? Sure. He was never like that. He was always courteous, the nicest person in the world. You just want to have him around you all the time. Mm-hmm. And when he was performing, you would laugh, you would sing with him. It was just a great feeling, very true Alaskan feeling, in that lounge every October when he would come to visit. And the other thing that was amazing was when a lot of people would leave after the show was over and everything shut down and we closed the doors, there would be about maybe 20 or 30 other people there for Midnight Stories. With Jim. And that's when you get to know him and understand the life he's led, because he would tell stories and then keep singing and playing music. My favorite one was the chicken one, and I've been trying to remember that one, but it was all about some chickens that he wrote a song about here in Alaska, and I can't remember it, but it made me laugh so hard, and he would do that for me all the time. He was such a great man, a true legend.
You were Lord Trapper, the Ferrandi. Yeah. Ferrandi would segue into the Iditarod, and so there was this overlap, and so I know that there was always this connection going on. Eddie, I'm sorry this goes by so quickly here.
It does, but that's okay. I'm glad to be a part of it.
It's always a pleasure, you know. Again, the venue tonight, right after Saturday Night Live. And when you talk about one of the truly nice guys in the broadcast industry, you are the epitome of that. You've always been, you're always involved in the community. One day I'll have to share the terrific story about you emceeing our Midnight Suns barbershop chorus with a bunch of middle-aged white guys. And there's a terrific story behind this. I'll get you on, because I do want to talk to you about your career, because it's a fantastically entertaining career, and you know, you're part of the fabric of Alaska Broadcast, and you've added so much to it. We really appreciate you joining us on the Big Alaska
Show,
pal.
Thank you, Steve. And so, thank you. You give me way too much credit, but I appreciate it. And it would be my pleasure to be a part of it. Please say hello to Steve and everyone. I know Steve forever as well. So it's wonderful.
Thank you so much. You bet. As we say, Steve, a name you can trust.
Hey, there you go.
Let's give Eddie Parker, a Big Alaska Show thank you and much success.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Our next guest that joins us is a longtime friend of mine, Steve Rachednik. He and his wife, Carolyn, own a company called Sprocket Heads, a very talented film and video production company. Upon Jim's passing, Steve put together a video from one of the songs that Hobo Jim sang, which is I Am Alaska. And we're going to post the link that you can see it on our BigAlaskaShow.com. In the meantime, this is Steve Rachednik.
Yeah, let me tell you about the first time I actually ever saw Jim, because I hardly knew him at all, and I only spent one day with him when we shot a commercial for Land's End down in Homer. But long before that, I was downtown during the Iditarod start, you know, there on 4th and G, I think, where the old First National Bank is. And I'm just there's a crowd of people, and you know, I knew who Jim was, but I didn't really know him, and I was vaguely familiar with the stuff he was doing. But I'm on the corner there, and then he comes popping out of the bank. I think it's a gift shop now, or it was then. He came out of the doors with his hat and his guitar, just popping out. It was like a cuckoo clock, man. He just came, poof, he's out on the sidewalk. He's singing that song, playing it like it's the first time, you know, ever. And everybody stops. You know, it's just like a E.F. Hutton moment. Everybody stops and listens, and he does the whole song, and then, poof, he pops back into the bank. It was like, wow, that was really cool. That was my first ever exposure to him. Other than, don't forget that probably before that, and I think you might have been involved with this, I think he lent his song Where Legends Are Born. Didn't he lend, air quote that, to Nye Frontier Ford?
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot
that. Where Legends Are Born, Nye Frontier Ford.
Yeah, you know, our good buddy John Whedon is a fantastic copywriter. You know, when you talk about that Land's End, Homer, that John, he's a copywriter. He's a fantastic talent. But he'll say singing is not one of the things he really does. But what he did was he was telling me the story how he had written this music for that. He does Russ Flying Service. He did the music.
Alaska Sales and Service, you know, come in today.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a lot of jingles.
This one, he sang in the Homer one that you shot that footage, he sang in a cassette and played it for Jim, and long story short, ended up doing that song. But while they were in the studio to record it with your buddy Charlie Hewitt that you share an office with, they couldn't remember the tune. And so he ran back, he excused himself, he goes and gets the cassette, comes back a half an hour later and plays the, oh yeah, yeah, and they finish up the song. You took the footage that you shot from that Homer shoot that
right.
You did.
So what, yeah, he, Hobo, I think, had a long history of playing at Land's End. And John was working with John Faulkner down there and Scott McMurrin. They were all, you know, always trying to promote Homer for how beautiful it is. It's just a natural, beautiful place. And so they brought me in to shoot a commercial that was based on the song that they wrote, Landon and Homer on the Catchamac Bay. And so that was really the only time I spent with Jim. I wish I could say I was a good friend, but I wasn't. I felt like it when we were done because he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we spent an afternoon out on the spit just, you know, singing that song everywhere. We just came up with some ideas. Let's put him in a boat. Let's take him out on the docks. Let's go out and stand on the shore. Let's go over to the Salty Dog and stand underneath all the money there. And just had a great time with him. And oh, and put him in the back of a convertible and drove up and down the spit. And he's like, people just love that guy. He could just stop, you know, start singing and playing. People would stop and listen, you know. It's like everybody would freeze, and then they'd move on. When he
we're going to play this song called I Am Alaska. And you took that audio and took the footage you shot for John Whedon's project.
From that shoot, I had a bunch of outtakes. You know, because he's singing a song, and Homer. And then I was thinking, John came to me with the idea of maybe we can do a video to I Am Alaska, because it's like an anthem. It should be the Alaska State song.
Yes.
So I started thinking, you know, I've got a bunch of footage no one's ever seen, and it's just outtakes from that. And he's singing a whole different song, but I figured I could probably come up with a way to use that footage over the other songs. That video has been seen by, I think it's got over 17,000 views now.
We'll post that link of that video you put this music to. This is called I Am Alaska.
I am the raven's call from ancient cedars standing tall. I break the silence of the fog over icy waterfalls. I'm an eagle when he flies in a clear blue mountain sky. Hear the sound of freedom's cry. I am Alaska. I am the one who's come with a harpoon and a drum. Over frozen trails I traveled to a land of midnight sun. I'm a howling husky team. I'm every miner's dream, laying golden in the stream. I am Alaska. I stand strong with open arms. In my greatness I do care. In my youth I am the future of all who've come to dare. And my heart is bold Denali, forever wild and free. I crown America's majesty. I am Alaska.
Well, I built her railway north, her harbors and her ports, and I cut the Alcan Highway with the coming of the war. I've harvested her oceans on many a stormy sea. I'm as proud as I can be. I am Alaska. I am the farmer's hand who broke this hardened land and tilled these fertile valleys where now my children stand. I'm a roughneck standing soil, a driller who has toiled so this world could have my oil. I am Alaska. I stand strong with open arms. In my greatness I do care. In my youth I am the future of all who come to dare. My heart is bold, Denali, forever wild and free. I crown America's majesty. I am Alaska.
So that's our show, and we hope we conveyed in our own small way just how much Hobo Jim meant to Alaska. And whether you knew him or if you met him for the first time, you felt like you always met one of your best friends. And Hobo Jim had a way of making us feel proud to be an Alaskan. And the show reminds me how blessed I am to have my wife, Amy. Baby girl, love you. And Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Mike, Terry, Eddie, and Steve for joining us. We want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tuttle, or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. Visit them anytime at aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guest, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying through your tooth, tall Alaska Tales, it's gotta be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.